everyone, and welcome to the Middle East and Beyond. I'm Barry Stagner, coming to you from beautiful, sunny Southern California. And I'm here with my dear friend and brother, Amir Sarfati, coming from the Lower Galilee and the beautiful Jezreel Valley. Shalom, Amir.
Shalom, Pastor Barry. It's evening already here in Galilee. It's been a very long day with a lot of breaking news and interesting things that are coming from the Gulf states as President Trump is on his second stop in his journey here. And it's good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. And Amir, today for us is a monumental day as we look back to, according to the Gregorian calendar, May 14th, 1948, when all of a sudden the prophetic calendar began to move forward as Israel, as Isaiah prophesied and posed the question, can a nation be born in a day? And indeed, on that day, Israel was born. The people have been regathering back into their national homeland, the Jewish people, but not everybody's excited about this momentous prophetic event that we commemorate today, some 77 years later. And there are those who are calling this a day of catastrophe. And maybe you can talk to us about Nakba Day and explain its origin and meaning in the Middle East today.
Yes, thank you. Well, Nakba, as you already said, it means catastrophe in Arabic. And a very interesting thing, Pastor Barry, is that the very origin of that word and term attached to the 1948 establishment of Israel goes back to a professor in the Beirut University, the American University in Beirut. His name is Dr. Constantine Zurek. And Constantine Zurek is a Syrian historian who taught at that American university. And in a book that was published in 1948 called The Meaning of the Disaster, take a look at what he actually said. He said, the defeat of the Arabs in Palestine is not a small downfall, Naksa, but it is a catastrophe, Nakba, in every sense of the word. And then, believe it or not, he said, seven Arab countries declare war on Zionism in Palestine. Seven countries go to war to abolish the partition and to defeat Zionism. He basically says seven Arab countries invaded into the land to stop the UN partition plan. In other words, and then he says, and quickly they left the battle after losing much of the land of Palestine and even the part that was given to the Arabs in the partition plan. In other words, they wanted to take the parts of the Jews and they ended up losing also the part of the Arabs. And then he said, when the battle broke out, our public diplomacy began to speak of our imaginary victories to put the Arab public to sleep and talk of the ability to overcome and win easily until the Nakba happened. He also distinguished between the Zionists and the Arabs to explain the war outcome. And look what he says. He says, Zionism is deeply implanted in Western life while we are far from it. They live in the present and look to the future, while we are drugged up dreaming of a magnificent past. And the last thing he said, he concluded, we must admit our mistakes, the Arab mistake, and recognize the extent of our responsibility for the disaster that is our lot. So even this, the whole story of Nakba was, it's a fake thing. It was actually something that in 1948, it was already understood that it is their fault and they should take responsibility because they're the ones that invaded. They're the ones that asked the local Arabs to leave in order for them to go in and conquer the lands of the Jews. And they ended up losing their land and the land of the Jews. And they had to stop the war with all the local Arabs that left stuck in their countries. That's the ethnic cleansing they're accusing us for when it's the Arab nations that actually did it to the local Arabs in what's called then Palestine. And again, they took responsibility for that in 1948 when he invented that word and attached it to that event. But everything changed. They are rewriting history. And Yasser Arafat decided that this is the right time to use it as a way to describe our suffering. And then he changed it and made it an internationally recognized day, even in the UN and all across the world. Believe it or not, even in the Tel Aviv University today, Arab students commemorated it, because we're a democracy. We allow freedom of speech, and we allow that garbage in our own country.
Yeah, Amir, it's kind of interesting. In thinking back on that invasion that took place on the day that statehood was declared, you know, there's a lot of people today who are siding with this Nakba type of thought. And it's not limited to the Middle East. We know Australia plans to participate in this commemoration of the catastrophe. But one of the interesting things, I think, that we need to remind the audience of is that Israel was attacked by these nations, had virtually no aircraft, small arms, and yet here they are victorious. And people today, many within the church, sadly, are saying, well, modern Israel is not biblical Israel. And I tell you, one of the most significant proofs in my mind is that what happened on that fateful day when Israel declared statehood and those days that followed and every other battle behind it, it is clear that the Iron Dome is not protecting Israel strictly, but the Iron Hand of God is watching over his people, and he never sleeps nor slumbers at that task. And what a wonderful day for us to remember that we see Bible prophecy being fulfilled yet to this very day, now some 77 years later. You mentioned at the outset, Amir, that Trump's on a tour. And, you know, I think we'd have to hesitate to call it a political tour. It's really a business tour. He's out there cutting deals, as he would do as a real estate mogul. But everything that's been happening out there, especially in the countries that he's been visiting, has been very curious and maybe even a little bit of a revelation to the fact that 1 Corinthians 2:14 says the natural man cannot discern the things of God because they are spiritual. And it seems as though he's making some moves that could be viewed with some concern. And maybe you can address that issue for us today.
Yeah. Well, I will not hide from you or from the audience my utter shock and disappointment from some of the moves that President Trump did. However, I will tell you now, in his worst day, I still prefer him over Kamala in her best day. It has to be very clearly stated. This is by far the most friendliest administration Israel ever had in the White House. So, but adding to that, I must, you know, we must call things the way they are and not hide things from, I mean, I don't have any allegiance to any politician. And when I see things that are wrong, I call them out. I don't hide them. And I think that President Trump, from the very beginning, in the preparation for this tour, I think he made some statements and later on made some moves that were raising eyebrows in Israel and also in America, believe it or not. A lot of people are kind of concerned. And it started with the fact that he hid from us the deal with the Houthis that he had, or ceasefire with the Houthis. Now, look, President Trump doesn't need to tell us anything in advance, but it would be nice to hear it from him and not from the media. But this, where are the allies? And we're the ones that are getting hit by the Houthis. And basically what Trump basically said is, as far as we're concerned, the Houthis can fire at Israel. We're not going to take sides here. As long as they don't fire at us or at commerce ships, we're okay. The fact that, by the way, the Houthis just shut down another MQ-9, $30 million UAV, American UAV, they shot it down last night. I guess you have to turn a blind eye to that one. But I will tell you, it's probably liberating for us. If you really think about it, from now on, Israel will have to take care of business without having to even coordinate anything with America, because it's going to be our planes alone in the skies of Yemen. And we're going to talk about what we did a few days ago and what we are about to do a few hours from now. So that's the one thing, the Houthi thing. And then came, of course, the whole rumor that he's going to allow the Saudis to have nuclear plants. You know, when our neighbor is becoming nuclear, it's good for us to know. And our objection is, of course, due to the fact that, you know, our neighbors are not exactly true to their promises all the time. And they can be nice now, they can turn against us tomorrow. So you don't want a Middle East nuclear race. And the last thing that happened is, of course, the whole Qatar thing that it started with him receiving $400 million Boeing 747-800 jet that is a flying carpet base, flying a palace basically. And the reason I don't mind that President Trump flies something like that, I think the optics of that are horrible. But I do think that when a country gives you $400 million worth of a private jet, you will probably tend to be more favorable towards it than something else. Now, it's one thing if you cut deals with them. They just, by the way, cut a deal that Qatar will buy 170 jets from Boeing. It's a $200 billion deal. That's good. I get it. You need some working hands in America. You need your economy. You need investments in America. You need, but remember, receiving a gift from a country, it doesn't look good, but it also makes people wonder, are your decisions going to be pure or tainted with favoritism because of that? I mean, Trump, don't forget, Trump has his own business in Qatar. Now he has his own gift from Qatar. And people in Israel are saying, if that same country that Trump said in 2017 that is actually promoting terrorism, is if that same country with hundreds of millions of dollars changing his mind, doesn't look good, does it? What is the message that he's sending to the others? And then, of course, came the meeting today with the Al Jolani. 25 years since the last time American president met with a Syrian president. This is not even an elected president. He's an ISIS terrorist who took off his ISIS robe and put on himself a suit. Up until 4 months ago, there was a bounty on his head, $10 million bounty, because the guy was the head of Hariram, and that's a ISIS organization that beheaded and killed and butchered many people. You don't put a bounty of $10 million on someone unless he did some horrific things. And now, Trump says we cannot really live in the past and always hold things against people who what they did in the past. And he's right, you cannot live in the past. But Al Jolani allowed his own gang to kill and massacre the Alawites and the Druze just a week and two ago. That's not the
Right.
past, that's the present. He did the same against the Christian, he will do the same against the Kurds. So I don't really truly understand the logic behind cutting deals under the pressure of jihadist countries and Muslim Brotherhood countries like Turkey and Qatar and accepting Al Jolani as a world leader. But again, Pastor Barry, I decided not to try to find logic anymore. As you just read from the Bible, I don't think that we should look at everything that Trump is doing as something that should make sense biblically to us. And he's not a pastor, he's not a spiritual person, he does not let the Spirit of God lead him when he does things. This is a business tour. He has a big grand plan to make America great again. And the only question is Israel going to be thrown under the wheels of a $400 million private jet? That's the question.
Yeah, we do live in an age of delusion. Amir, as the Bible said, would, I believe, begin before the tribulation and ultimately reach its zenith during the tribulation, where the earth dwellers will believe the lie of the Antichrist. But the proverbial skids are being greased right now for his rise to power. And, it is curious that one comment that he made about, we're not going to interfere, if the Houthis attack Israel, who knows what that statement really intended? Could be that we're not going to encourage Israel not to respond. Could be that, hey, we're out. We're just
No.
watching out for our own interests. So it's just really a difficult season. And I think what you just mentioned is critically important to recognize for us as Christians. We know the end of the story. We've read the back of the book. We know what's going to happen with the Saudis in the Ezekiel war scenario. All these things are clear to us. So we have a very distinct advantage over those who are operating in the flesh and not
Yeah.
understanding the things going on in the world. And Amir, Gaza is always going to make the news. We've had some rather interesting developments there over the past week or so, including some eliminations, and maybe you can address that issue.
Yeah. We'll start with yesterday's elimination around this time, 24 hours ago. Israel, similar to what it did in Beirut to Hassan Nasrallah, Israel attacked in what's known as belt of fire. Belt of fire is when you know more or less the target outline. And look what we did. This is Gaza, as you can see. And let's zoom in all the way to Khan Yunis, to where the whole thing happened, in the compound of the European hospital. They have, by the way, more hospitals than Israel has. And we found this underground facility where we believe Yahya Sinwar's brother, Muhammad Sinwar, was there. Not only him, but also we believe that the Hamas legendary spokesperson Abu Ubaida was there. And as of an hour ago, we also have indications that Muhammad Shabana, the commander of the Rafah Brigade, was there as well. So we're looking at Muhammad Sinwar, the most, I guess, horrific person. This guy was the mastermind behind October 7th. He was worse than his brother, Yahya Sinwar. And it seems like he's gone. And with him, others. But 24 hours before that, we eliminated this guy, Hassan Aslih. Hassan Aslih was supposedly an Al Jazeera reporter, but he was actually a terrorist of the Khan Yunis Brigade. Pastor Barry, I have videos that he actually took on October 7th with his own phone. Videos of massacre that happens in the kibbutzim near Gaza, where he is praising the people that just committed that, and he's happy. I have a video of a whole family slaughtered on the floor in their living room, and he's the one who takes it and glorifies Hamas. I have videos of him driving one of the stolen cars from Gaza on October 7th and saying, "We took it from the settlers." We also know that he was part of those who raped Israeli women in the kibbutzim. For that, he gave his phone to someone else to hold because he just wanted to enjoy the sexual act without having it recorded. But we have eyewitnesses that told us that some of the Nukba terrorists that we captured. So this guy was a terrorist, a rapist, and someone who, and by the way, this is the story of the reporters and the journalists in Gaza. They're all terrorists on the payroll of Hamas, spreading propaganda. So he was killed. He has almost 800,000 people following on Telegram. He was killed first, then came the elimination in the same hospital compound of Muhammad Sinwar and all the gang. And now it's going to be easier to reach a deal to end the war, because he was the one who insisted, Muhammad Sinwar was the one who insisted on not giving up. Now, Pastor Barry, people need to understand that there's only two options on the table. And these are the options that people need to see, that the options are either they accept the Witkoff outline, or we go to the Gideon's Chariots operation. The Witkoff deal is very simple. Release right now 10 living hostages and half of the dead ones. And for 45 days, we're going to talk about how we can reach a final deal. But we still don't commit to end the war unless you guys, you know, disarm and leave. And that's the Witkoff outline, which Hamas said no to forever. And Israel said, you've got until Friday to say yes to that deal, or take a look at what we are planning. Gideon's Chariots is this operation, and we are going to start with it this Friday. Take a look at it. We're going to take care of a humanitarian area down south, and all the residents that are uninvolved are going to be pushed all the way from the northern part of Gaza Strip into the humanitarian zone through filters and gates that will make sure they are unarmed and uninvolved. And the only one left in Gaza will be terrorists, and we're going to take over, destroy Gaza. And listen to me, when I say destroy Gaza, we destroy everything underground and everything under the ground. At the same time, we're going to make sure that those that are in the humanitarian zone will already start leaving. The civilian population began to leave today. Today, 600 Gazans were loaded on 6 different planes, flying to the UAE, flying to Europe, and to Turkey. And many of them are actually without dual citizenship. That means they are part of this voluntarily displacement. And this is it. So, Pastor Barry, until Friday, Hamas has to say yes to Witkoff outline, or we're going all in with all the power, and it's going to be deadly for Hamas. This is why they allowed Idan Alexander. You think it's only for Trump? If they didn't see the hundreds of tanks that are flowing all the way to Gaza right now, they would have never said yes. But they did this gesture to release Idan Alexander, the American passport holder, IDF soldier. They released him. Here he is. He was released. Thankfully, he's in good condition. His mother was so excited to see him. Everything is great. We love that. Everything is great. But make no mistake, the reason why Hamas did it is twofold. They wanted to have a wedge between Israel and America, and they also wanted to pause the soon coming devastating maneuver that will finish them. So, they thought that Trump will be more generous, and for in exchange, he will push Israel to stop its plans to move forward. But in reality, Trump just said, if until Friday, until I'm leaving, they're not going to say yes, go ahead and do what you need to do. So, these are the options on the table, and by Friday, we are going to see what Hamas decided. Now, there's a lot of pressure right now in Doha as we speak. Right now, Israeli delegation and Hamas and the mediators are sitting. They want to change the Witkoff outline. They don't want to end. They don't want to commit to an outline that does not put an end to the war. There's a new initiative that the Arab countries just proposed an hour ago. Everything looks good until you reach the last two paragraphs. In the last two paragraphs is that the Palestinian Authority is going to govern Gaza. It's never going to happen. They're the same jihadists and those who want to destroy us. And the last one is Hamas policemen will be integrated into the force that is taking care of Gaza. It's not going to happen. So everything else is great. But the Palestinian Authority cannot rule, and any Hamas person cannot be integrated into any ruling power in Gaza anymore. This is it, Pastor Barry. A lot of things are happening in the last few hours, and Gaza, of course, is in the center of some very critical deliberations right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the old saying, the Palestinians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And so I think we know what's coming next is Gideon's chariot and the things that you covered a moment ago. And you mentioned the president's statement, the US president's statement about the Houthis and not intervening or getting involved in the exchanges that come from them into Israeli territory. We just had an event happen that we talked about last week at the Ben Gurion Airport or nearby. And there's been some other actions that are happening in port cities there in Yemen. And maybe you can talk about that a little bit as to what happened on May 5 and 6.
So on May 5 and May 6, Israel paid a visit to Yemen twice. Of course, the first time was attacking the seaports of Hodeidah and Ras Issa, but the second time, the next day, it destroyed completely the airport of that's what the airport looked like. Now, they claim that they're opening it tomorrow or maybe even today. Of course, it's propaganda. We destroyed the runways and we destroyed all the terminal buildings. There's no way they can operate there. They can make a sound that they may be able to do it. We destroyed everything there. It's going to take them a while. But I want you to know that Israel issued 2 days ago a warning once again to evacuate all three major seaports in Yemen, and Israel reissued that warning even this morning. Remember, in the last 24 hours, we know that the Houthis launched missiles. Two of them disintegrated on the way, and one of them was intercepted. But they haven't stopped, Pastor Barry. They believe that's the best way to put pressure on Israel. They want to be perceived as those who impose a blockade on Ben Gurion Airport, but in reality, the blockade is on their seaports and they don't have an airport anymore. So Israel issued an evacuation order until further notice. In other words, we can attack at any given moment, and you will not know about it in advance because we already issued an evacuation notice, and it says until further notice. And that's why all the ships left the docking places. And now, by the way, it's easier to destroy the ports because we couldn't attack all the areas of the port because there were some foreign ships that were docking there, and you don't want to do that to foreign countries. So we made sure that everybody left, and now we are going to make sure to complete the job. It's going to happen, I believe, in the next few hours. Israel will have to take care of business. Look, we don't want to embarrass Trump while he's in the region, but I want you to know that when the Houthis are firing rockets, two of them actually fell in Saudi Arabia while he was in Saudi Arabia. From Yemen to Israel, rockets fly above Saudi Arabia. So the Houthis don't really care that Trump is there. In fact, they did it while he was giving a speech in Saudi Arabia. Israel, on the other hand, is not interested to embarrass Trump while he's in the region. So we refrain from doing some major things in Yemen, but we take care of business in Gaza. And I believe that when Trump is going to leave, both Hamas and the Yemenites will find out.
Yeah, and let me just encourage everybody, there's kind of an ebb and flow to Bible prophecy, and things will escalate for a season and maybe seem to calm down for a while. But there's coming a point in time where everything is going to move forward and move toward the fulfillment of the 70th week of Daniel. And I think we're pretty close to that time period. And therefore, it's all the more important that you subscribe, like, share, and comment to both of our channels so that we can get the word out about what's going on. And sadly, there is a lot of misinformation. It's not just in the liberal media, but within the church as well regarding the nation of Israel. So these stories become more and more important every single day as we march toward that moment and twinkling of an eye when the church is taken out of the way and then the lawless one is to be revealed and Israel takes center stage in world affairs as the 70th week of Daniel is fulfilled. So please make sure that you're subscribing, liking, sharing, and commenting on this program. And Amir, your other northern border is always busy. Things going on with Hezbollah and their tunnel network and the recent events are noteworthy, I think, if you could bring us up to speed on what's happening there.
On May 8, Israel launched another belt of fire type of attack. When I say belt of fire, you basically bomb one end of a tunnel and another end, so anybody's there, he cannot leave or run away, and then you destroy everything in between. And look at this, you can clearly see that on the screen. A whole line of bunker busters that are dropped there to destroy a massive underground facility of Hezbollah near Nabatieh. It's a tunnel complex with weapon caches and shafts, rendering it to inoperable and killing at least one. But again, these are things that Hezbollah had prepared for a massive attack against Israel. And also, by the way, in the last few days, we also attacked motorcyclists and drivers of cars. And these are all Hezbollah terrorists that were trying to operate and move from one place to another. So Israel literally is working around the clock every day to thwart any attempt of Hezbollah to entrench itself once again in southern Lebanon and sometimes even beyond there. And the good thing is that the Lebanese military and the Lebanese government understand that it has to be done. They're not going to do it, and Israel is not going to trust them to do it. So we have to do it. And you don't really hear so much protest from the Lebanese government. Everybody understands, and even from Trump's speech today and yesterday, he urged the Lebanese to get out of the grip that Hezbollah is taking of their government and to move to a better future. I think that the aim of President Trump is to bring Syria to normalization with Israel, and that will open the door for normalization of Lebanon with Israel. So more and more, they talk about normalization rather than war with Israel, and that tells you a lot about the declining status of Hezbollah that is suffering every day, blow after blow, and they don't even have the power to retaliate anymore. That's what we have right now in Lebanon as well.
Yeah, Amir, you know, I don't know if you guys realize it there in Israel, but, you know, when you say Mossad, I think everybody out in Western culture, many people at least, you know, kind of go, ooh, you know, because Mossad is legendary and it's daring and some of the exploits down through the years. And it's been a rather interesting event that's developed there in Syria. Maybe you could talk about that for us today.
Yeah. Well, on May 11th, a few days ago, non-Israeli Mossad agents, because the Mossad also recruits some people from outside of Israel, there was a whole Mossad squad in Syria that operated for a few years to try and find remains of Israeli missing soldiers from previous wars, in this case from 1982, 43 years ago. That tells you the commitment of Israel to its missing soldiers, abducted soldiers, whatever it is. Not only that we want the living ones back, but we also want the dead ones back, and we also want dead ones that have been killed over 40 years ago. We have a whole section in the Mossad that is in charge, and the Sultan Yaqub battle in 1982 was a very bloody battle, and in that battle, quite a few people got killed, but there was a whole tank crew that was taken captivity. The soldiers were killed, but their bodies were taken by the Syrians. The remains of one of them returned to Israel by the Russians in 2019. Netanyahu received the remains from Putin. And of course now, Zvi Feldman, his body was retrieved 40 years later in a battle. We're talking about under fire in a covert operation. Mossad agents managed to go to the Yarmouk cemetery and take some remains of several people. And we hope that one of them would be Eli Cohen, our man in Damascus. But again, these are the remains. We brought them to Israel. And when the soldiers brought them to the Israeli side, they said the prayer, the Kaddish prayer, as we say, on dead people. And there you go, you can see it.
Yeah, Amir, talking about some of the other things that have been going on in our world, you know, the relationship with Jordan seems to have been strained since October 7th, and things and the criticism and some of the language coming out of there, you know, regarding the aid that is allowed to go into the Gaza Strip, has created a bit of a strain there. Maybe you can bring us up to date on that.
Yeah. Just before I say that, yeah, we'll talk about Jordan, but, you know, the president of Syria met with President Trump today, and President Trump basically outlined the terms for America to, you know, that wants to see in with Syria. But Israel has its own terms. Israel wants to keep the Golan Heights. Israel wants to take care of the minorities, especially the Druze, and Israel wants to stay on Mount Hermon. So I don't think there'll be any normalization with Syria unless these three things will be fulfilled. When it comes to Jordan, you know, there's so much fake news and so much things behind the scenes that people don't know, and it's very sad. Doron Peskin, an Israeli researcher, came up with an interesting revelation a few days ago. And he said, look, the growing Jordanian criticism of Israel is related to something. Since October 7th, Jordan has intensified its criticism of Israel, particularly due to Israel's recent ban on aid entering to Gaza, which has, listen to this, it has strained Jordan's relations with Israel and impacted its economy. Oh, yeah. Exclusive aid access and profits. Israel granted Jordan exclusive access to deliver aid to Gaza, allowing Jordan to charge high fees of $2,200 per aid truck and $200,000 to $400,000 per airdrop through a charitable organization and generating tens of billions of dollars in profit. Limited direct aid contributions. Jordan has primarily facilitated the transfer of aid from foreign organizations and countries to Gaza rather than providing significant aid itself, capitalizing financially on the crisis. Do you understand what we're talking about? We're talking about the fact that the main reason why Jordan is criticizing Israel right now is the fact that they're losing tons of money. That's what it's all about. Pastor Barry, $2,200 per truck and $200,000 to $400,000 per flight. And Jordan is the only one that was, you understand? And it's not even Jordanian help. Jordan just does the work and gets the money. It's like a contractor. They just deliver it. And now when we stopped all humanitarian aid from going in, the Jordanians are not happy because they're losing a lot of money. So they're not really interested in help going to the Gazans. They're interested in profiting from it.
Yeah.
And it's very sad to see that.
It is. And Amir, there's some stories moving to kind of the beyond portion of our program that I found to be interesting. And I wanted to mention a couple of things. You know, Jesus talked about when asked by Peter, Andrew, James, and John about the signs of his coming and the end of the age. And he did mention earthquakes in the midst of that. And there's a rather interesting story that popped up regarding a rabbi warning about an imminent earthquake in the States as a pre-Messiah sign. I thought that was curious because the ultimate rabbi, Jesus himself, mentioned earthquakes being an indication that we are nearing the end of the age. And of course, that would be represented by an increase. But one of the things that's important, I think, for us to recognize, you know, a lot of people talk about, especially here in California, which we know a little bit about earthquakes here. You know, everybody talks about the San Andreas Fault, but there is a far riskier fault that runs through the Pacific Northwest called the Cascadia Fault. And it's a subduction zone that could cause a decrease in elevation along the coastline and flood many heavily populated areas. You know, the San Andreas Fault that does run down by San Francisco all the way into Southern California goes through many very sparsely inhabited areas. So, you know, while the event would be significant, the loss of human life, the potential loss of human life would be far less. But the interesting thing about this particular research that the rabbi, I believe, was looking at is that the Cascadia Fault, which is long overdue for a massive quake, would probably land somewhere between 9 and 10 on the Richter scale. And it runs right under Seattle, so it would be catastrophic in nature. And also the expansion of the floodplains that runs along the coast would also cause a massive loss of property and life. But I thought it interesting, Amir, that there's a rabbi who's talking about earthquakes as a sign of, in his mind, the first coming of the Messiah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Of course, we know that for the Jewish people, the second coming is mixed with the first coming. So they are waiting for him to come and reign. They just forgot that Isaiah said that he first has to come and die for our sins and take our place. So Isaiah 53 was moved aside, and it's the beginning of Isaiah that they want to hold on to. And yeah, I think that there's a lot of messianic talks recently. By the way, the term "we live in messianic times" is a term that I get to hear a lot recently. And everybody understands that what we are watching right now is in biblical proportion. It's not even something we can explain. Every day, a new drama. Every day, a bigger thing. And everything that is happening in the world right now fits 3,000% to what the Bible says, not to what someone said before, to what the Bible said. And so it makes sense that people will run to the Bible and to say, hey, these are the messianic times. These are days that are only to be likened to be those before the return of the Messiah.
He had some interesting activity there at the Temple Mount recently as well, yeah, as a group of activists tried to smuggle a goat for a Passover sacrifice on to the Temple Mount. And of course, the Israeli police arrested 9 suspects, according to the article. And, you know, for them to take these kind of bold steps is a bit unique in the sense that, you know, it seems as though people are becoming more and more solidified in their position, you know, regarding the nation of Israel, the polarization that we've talked about that's happening around the world. And there is coming a time where there is going to be a third temple. We know that for sure. Daniel talks about it. In other words, you know, for the daily sacrifice to be taken away, for the abomination, the desolation to take place, there has to be a temple and there has to be sacrifices. And to watch this in line with what you just shared, living in Messianic times, you know, you would have this urge and interest in getting back to what the law has required as far as the sacrifices go. And now here you've got a group, you know, much like the Temple Mount Faithful movement and Gershon Solomon before he died, you know, trying to set the cornerstone and causing, you know, I believe 17 people were shot at that point in time some years ago. But it seems curious that this messianic push, I think, that was really launched from October 7th is making its way into not just thoughts, but actions.
Yes, you're right. But we as Christians have to be very smart and identify the things that should happen before we're out of here and the things that should happen after we're out of here and not mix the two. And the fact that the temple is going to stand in Jerusalem is a fact. I mean, it's biblical. It's true. It's going to happen. The question is when, and we know that it has to be part of a bigger deal that Israel is going to have. And if Israel can only have a deal that granted the right to build a temple if Israel has its upper hand, if Israel is the victor, if Israel has a smashing victory over its enemies, and if I may say, over Muslim enemies, because that's the Temple Mount that we're talking about. And so, as you and I always teach, we believe that the Ezekiel war will bring about the downfall of radical Islam and maybe pave the way for the Antichrist to rise and offer that deal that then will include the building of the temple. So, yeah, we do see now people that think that there is a red heifer or people that are trying to slaughter a goat here or a goat there, but these are attempts. It's not going to happen. And we have to remember, we are not going to see the Antichrist. We are waiting for Jesus Christ. So if you're a believer, spirit-filled, born again, and you're eagerly waiting for the return of the Lord to come and take us, and that's our hope. And as you mentioned, we won't be able to change the course of history and the course of the future as it's already prescribed. But the decisions we make today can change our location when those things happen. If you're truly a believer, you will not be here. If you're not, you are going to be here.
And Amir, you know, there's a lot of talk today about, I get stories all the time about, you know, a catastrophic economic collapse. And I thought our next story is kind of, will deal with that and help us maybe decipher a little bit better what we are to expect as Christians. And as we've been mentioning throughout the program, we have a distinct advantage in that we know what is going to happen. We know, you know, with some specificity, you know, the details as they're going to unfold in a biblically chronological order to a degree, but some of the details we may not know. But one of the things I think that is important for us to recognize is that Jesus talked about the likeness of the days before the 70th week of Daniel being paralleled with those of Noah's day, where there were multiple things going on, the thoughts and intents of man's heart being only evil continually. We can check that box. Violence filling the earth, we can check that box as well. But the other thing we need to recognize is that they were buying and selling, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And what that represents is an age of prosperity. And, you know, we've got, you know, what Paul was talking about, you know, the destruction and its proximity to the declaration of peace and safety. It's interesting that those words in the Greek can also be translated as prosperity and security. So I don't know that during the church age we should be looking for a catastrophic global economic collapse. But I think what the Bible indicates is we should be looking for, you know, what this next story reports on, the Dow soaring 1,100 points after China and the Trump team lower their tariffs. And, you know, we've seen a huge rise in the market here. You know, coin is back over, I think it's maybe even today, $105,000 per coin. The other cryptocurrencies are on the rise and, you know, things are looking good. And some of the articles that are floating around out there, even about the golden age has begun. And this is more consistent with what the Bible teaches about the days right before the 70th week of Daniel, that it will be a time of prosperity that causes people to basically ignore the impending signs of judgment, like the days of Noah.
Yeah. And this is why I criticize a whole viewpoint of only money and deals, and without understanding that, you know, I'm not worried about Israel. I'm worried about any country that positioning itself against Israel, and especially countries that were given the mandate to stand by Israel. And this is why my concern for steps of President Trump and my concern for decisions that perceives as throwing Israel under the bus or stuff like that. This is not because, you know, I'm against Trump. I'm not. As I said before, I take him in his worst day over Kamala's in her best day. I still believe it's a great administration compared to the one we had before. I just wish that there will be the right people to consult him when it comes to Israel, because Israel is not just a country. It's not just something that either stay away from or be all over. Israel is God's place and the way God is testing the nations. And I think America was given the mandate to stand by Israel. And when we look at Ezekiel war, the only reason why Russia and Iran and Turkey will come against Israel is because America will not be able or will not be willing to stand by Israel. It's so obvious. So all I'm saying is that pay attention. It's not just another country. It's the things of God that affects your country, that affects your people. I know the end of the story when it comes to Israel. I know exactly what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen to Israel. But we care for that administration and for the outcome of its decisions and the way it affects the American people also and the rest of the people around the world. And so my point is, when you being perceived as separatists, uh-huh. Yes?
Separatists, yeah.
And when you kind of say Israel is the problem, not the solution, and when you throw Israel under the bus, you're not punishing us. You're punishing yourself. You're not going to bring judgment upon us. You're going to bring judgment upon yourself. And this is why I care so much. And people write me and say, Amir, aren't you afraid to lose subscribers if you come against Trump? I say, I don't have any allegiance to any politician. I don't care about followers. I care about people coming to faith and people being on the right track. And so do you, I'm sure. And so for me to be in so much pain when I see decisions that are so not well with what things should be when it comes to an administration that claims to be the most pro-Israeli one, it breaks my heart to see that. I know the story. I know the end. I still care for America, and I still care for this administration. And I still care for the people who voted, knowing and thinking that America will never betray Israel.
Yeah, Amir, it's been said that affluence is a far greater weapon in the enemy's hands than poverty. And, you know, in times of poverty, people are calling out to God, praying for his help and his hand of provision. But in affluence, I couldn't help but think, as you were talking about someone who bears witness of exactly what you just mentioned, and that is the treatment of the Jews. That was Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, he went through the very blessings of God who gave him and said, you are the head of gold in that statue in Daniel 2, and then said, there'll be no kingdom as great as yours after that. And then where does he wind up? He says, he surveys his kingdom and says, look at what my hand has built. And he was struck with madness and then finally returned to his senses 7 years later. So yeah, thinking about the fact that we've talked so much about the absence of the U.S. in Bible prophecy, you have to wonder if a golden age isn't the worst thing that could happen and cause people to be distracted from what's truly important.
I cannot say that it didn't cross my mind over the past few days. I truly thought exactly about what you just said. Maybe the snare is actually prosperity. Maybe the snare is actually being a separatist. Maybe the snare is America first, even on the expense of Israel. That's a snare, you know?
Yeah.
And again, you know, I want to share with you something personal, Pastor Barry. Over the past few days, the things that I've watched and the things that I've witnessed online, and the proclamations, actions, decisions, it really made me physically sick. And you know that because I texted you. I am physically sick. And I'm physically sick from seeing that because I care. It's because I care, because you know, when you see the faithful Christians that put in the ballot specific name, specific party to stand there and protect Israel and not satisfy jihadists and satisfy the funders of Hamas, and that will make sure Hamas will stay in power, not to satisfy the Muslim Brotherhood, not to take some spoils from them and bribes and gifts from them. You know, it breaks my heart. So for me personally, it affects me. And again, I still, as I said, I'm a staunch supporter of this administration 10,000 times over what we had before. But I want people to understand, we will not stand here and stay quiet and silent when we see things going the wrong way when it comes to biblical matters and when it comes to biblical principles. I will call them out, even if it's a president that I supported. I will call them out over and over again. I could care less if I lose followers. You could care less if you lose followers as well. What we want people to understand is the severity of actions that will lead to hurting Israel. And that's it. And it's important. It's important. This is why, by the way, this is a digital battle. This is why we tell people, look, guys, there's hundreds of millions of people that hate Israel. And they hate America, by the way. And they're overwhelming the internet. This is why we need you to subscribe, to like, to share, to comment, because that's the only way for us to win in that battle, is if we get the algorithm to see that there is engagement. And then, of course, things will be more exposed. There you go.
Well, Amir, I think the only thing to do now is to give the Aaronic blessing and wrap our time up. Just always a wonderful way to close the program. It, you know, for us, and speaking as a Christian in the United States, you know, there's some languages that are like music to your ears. And maybe we don't understand the words, even though we know what they say as you speak them. But I've said this before, I've said it at some of the conferences that we've spoken at. It is always moving to me, who probably heard you say it more than anybody else, to hear the Aaronic blessing in Hebrew. It resonates with our soul. And so I think that's a fitting way to bring things to a conclusion today.
Yeah. I just want to remind people that you and I will be in Canada this coming July and August. And so you guys, if you can, remember to sign up for these events. We have a QR code that will come up on the screen, and you can scan it, and we're almost full, but it'll be nice to have a full house in all of these events. And so take a look at this QR code and scan it for the Canada events of Pastor Barry and myself in this coming July, at the end of July, beginning of August, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, let's do the Aaronic blessing right now. Yevarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha. יאר אדוני פניו אליך ויחונקה, יישא אדוני פניו אליך וישם לך שלום.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance toward you and give you his shalom. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. So thank you, Pastor Barry. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Please share this and comment and subscribe and forward it to as many people as you can. Thank you. God bless you. Shalom from Galilee, and I'm sure shalom from
Southern California. California.